Paul Coburn, keeping us fit and well. For Mill Park Physiotherapy, call 9436 9666 or visit millparkphysio.com.au.
I just want to wish you well. I just want to wish you well.
Always good to see him on a Thursday afternoon. Hello, Copes.
Gee, it's a good day today,
too. Is it ever? Look at it.
Magnifique.
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 Actually, word.
I looked at the barometer last night and
it was, barometer?
It was, yeah, it was 140. I've never seen up that high before. You know, my wife doesn't
what
get
does
it.
What does that mean?
It means it's abnormal. It means very dry. So you've got high pressure.
Like my Nana had on the wall at home, you've got one of those things, haven't you?
Far. And I've got a rain gauge out the back too.
Well, I don't mind the rain gauge. It sort of makes a bit of sense. But the barometer?
Do you
trust the barometer?
No, you monitor it.
But do you trust the monitoring of the barometer?
It's this thing about people not trusting.
Well,
you monitor these things. Yeah, I do. I do it for my judgment. It's a judgment call.
Made it very hard.
Jeez, you got defensive. I mean, I got defensive, didn't I? Hey, today we're saving lives.
Yeah, good.
We are saving lives today.
I like this.
This is a big topic for us because our listeners, they've either had the terrible experience of witnessing someone have a cardiac arrest, sudden cardiac arrest, or they're going to in the future. So,
it's not very nice to think about.
Well, that's what happens. It's life. So today we're going to talk about ways that we could possibly save people's lives.
Well, I'm all for that. That's what we do. Community service here. Dr. David Bolzanello, sports physician, is with us to help us through this afternoon. G'day, David.
G'day. How are you?
Very well. Good to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Now, David's been brought to us by Sports Medicine Australia. They've chased up David for us. But David's been a regular on the show for a while anyway.
Yes.
And has a lot to do with young athletes as part of his career as a sports physician. Worked with Calder Cannons and various. He's been at Carlton. Been the Bulldogs.
Been everywhere, man.
He's been everywhere. But the reason we've got him in today is that we've been talking to Sports Medicine Australia about what their big issues are. And one is trying to get people using defibrillators or getting communities using defibrillators. And if you go to their website, sma.org, you can find out a lot of background.
.au?
Yes. Yeah.
The one I'm on at the moment.
Yeah, it's got .au. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Of course.
I'm running with .au. sma.org.au.
Yeah, so it's pretty easy. But we're going to talk about the use of defibrillators. Before we do that, I just want to go back a little bit with David.
Right.
And talk about what's brought him into this area. Because with his work with kids, a sudden cardiac arrest can be a disaster. So, Dave, what got you interested in this area in the first place?
An awareness that I was a bit complacent about this as a sports physician standing on the sideline, you know, expecting to see maybe a knock on the head or a hamstring or an ankle. Back in 2010, a young 19-year-old boy collapsed at training in Sunbury.
Yep.
That's part of the Calder Cannons catchment territory. And it occurred to me that it could easily have happened when in front of me at Calder if he'd been selected to represent Calder. So that's how I got interested. The sad thing about that is that that young man did not survive despite a doctor being there, a training, it was a parent, and an ambulance officer, Andrew White, who started the Defib for Life program.
Yep.
as you know, I mean, at best of times, ambulance responses, it's not Star Trek. They can't just materialise out of nowhere. It takes time for an ambulance to get there. And there wasn't a defibrillator available. So that started Andrew White's campaign, Defib for Life, to have these devices installed in situations where people are at risk.
Yep, they do great things.
So I started thinking about my situation at Calder.
Yeah.
Soon after that, I went overseas to a conference the International Olympic Commission sponsored on injury prevention and health of the athlete. We're moving away from, you know, how we do ACLs and how we treat this and that because, you know, we understand that fairly well, but we're now moving to prevention. There was an advanced team physician course, and basically I was aware that most, you know, medical groups around the world, FIFA, IOC, certainly at an elite level, sort of mandate that we should be looking at this issue more seriously. Not because it's common, but because when it happens, it's terrible.
Yeah.
So in terms of your management, you work with the academy and you work with Calder Cannons. So in those situations, you actually do some form of screening. What's the benefit of that?
Well, the benefit is that you're hoping to identify a person who may have a condition that has a higher rate of having a cardiac arrest. Now, and we need to get this in perspective. It's about 1 in 100,000 athlete per year episode. And that's largely in an elite group, but as we know in recent times, as you mentioned, it's happened in suburban football.
Yeah.
This year we've screened the Vic Metro boys. They've all had ECGs. Four of those ECGs had minor, abnormalities in inverted commas. The thing about athlete hearts is because they become bigger and stronger, they look a bit different on ECG, but further testing with echocardiogram and ultrasound test found that they've got normal hearts.
Right.
So we're looking for the conditions like Brugada and Wolff Parkinson White, these things that can cause an athlete to have an arrest.
So these sort of things that you inherit and you've got to begin with.
Inherit, yeah. And the other condition, which is probably more prevalent overseas because it tends to be a condition that happened in African people of African origin, is cardiomyopathy, hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. So, international football has a high predominance of African origin athletes, as does American basketball.
Yep.
So we're looking for those inherited conditions.
The age group that you're dealing with and that have been shown to have been affected in recent times, those issues and incidents we talked about, it surprised me a touch. I mean, they're very young. Young people are having this issue.
Well, that's the other reason I got interested. The at-risk group is the 16 to 25-year-old.
Did that surprise you when you learned that?
No, not when you think about it, because it's a time of growth.
Yep.
It's a time of increased, the kids come out of suburban football. Kids who make elite programs are usually pretty good. They do it reasonably easy at suburban football compared to their peers. But once you put them in elite programs and they're competing against their groups, the training intensity and the training playing goes up.
Mm.
So, kids who are in academy programs want to succeed. And if the coach says,
a lot of pushing,
you've got to run harder, mate, they'll run harder.
Yeah.
So they are pushing their heart. And their heart, like everything, a young male is not fully mature till about age 22. So their heart is being constantly stressed. And as they go up each level of competition, which gets harder and harder, there's another level of stress. But the thinking is, if you get to about 25 without this thing having declared itself, so the screening programs usually finish at about 25. There's, these sort of structured screening programs where we check the athlete every 1 to 2 years.
Yeah.
So this is not blocked arteries like you see in the older athlete.
No. Although, interestingly, if people may remember, there was the Norwegian swimmer who died at training, and it turned out he had advanced, despite his young age and athletic status, advanced coronary artery disease, which is probably a familial thing, with a minor abnormality of the shape of the artery, which predisposed him. But by far and away, it's these young athletes haven't got clogged arteries like the older athlete. So this is different to the 45-year-old guy who decides he wants to do a marathon.
Yeah.
So these are
structural things.
This is the electrics, not the plumbing.
Electrics largely, and the heart, and the cardiomyopathy, which is his enlarged, thickened heart, is a bit plumbing. Yeah.
So David, why don't we just screen everybody?
Well, that's interesting. Largely, screening programs cost money, and you have to, there's a finite resource of funds to go into medical systems, and you're testing 99,999 people to find one.
Mm.
So it devotes a large amount of resources. At elite level, where it's a small number and that's funded by the sport, that's different. But when you're asking the community to fund it, the community says, well, there are other ways to manage this. The other interesting thing is that more often than not, these people who collapse had no diagnosable condition.
So you could have missed it anyway. You could have screened them.
Yeah. I mean, there's in the press recently, early this year, a young man called Mertens in Belgium. He was in the FIFA program. So he was checked every year with ECG and echo.
Yep.
Completely normal. Still had a collapse.
Right. So it's not foolproof.
Not foolproof.
Is what we're saying.
So this brings us to why this using, knowing first aid and cardiac resuscitation, and in particular, understanding this extra technology that we now have, the defibrillator, we've actually moved a lot further forward and we're more likely to have impact by having more of these things around.
That's right. So if you've got a squad of 40 players and you spend $40 or $45 to do an ECG on all of those, you spend $1,600, you can get a defibrillator for $2,200.
And you can do it every, and it lasts and for 7 years or
and
something.
And it's there. Yeah, change the battery every 7 years, and they're fairly robust. I mean, the army has them, and they get bounced around the back of trucks and stuff, and they're amazing pieces of equipment.
Okay, we're going to have to take a break.
Let's come back and talk about that.
Yeah.
Defibs.
Yeah, let's come back and talk about how they work.
Yeah, let's do that. 22 past one, we're keeping you fit and well today. We might even save your life. Paul Coburn is with us from Mill Park Physio, 9436-9666. And Dr. David Bolzanello, sports physician, good friend of the program, talking defibs today, Cobes. Defibs. What is?
Defibs. Well, for
what's a defibrillator?
Do they work? Because we know some famous people that have worked on.
Who?
James Bond.
James Bond. Well, he's done it. He did his own, though.
No,
did he do his
she
own?
Had to, she
oh,
had
no,
to
you're right.
In.
She had
yeah,
to come
yeah.
in.
Actually,
yeah, yeah.
They're probably more simple than those, the way they work on that show. But you don't need someone to talk. The machine talks to you. But there's other cases. I know that I was just looking at the Defib for Life website, which we'll talk about in a minute. And there's a woman on there. There's a picture of a woman on there with her, I think, a daughter. And she was in the gym. And the gym acted quickly and saved her life. So that's a, you know, that's a great example. Dave, you were talking about one off air just before.
Yeah, there's another suburban gym, a 50-year-old guy. My niece works in this gym. He was in a spin class, just toppled off the bike.
Right.
And was successfully resuscitated. The automatic defibrillator zapped him four times in the cycle. And the feedback is that, well, he survived, and the feedback is that the guy's doing very well.
Because time's very important, isn't it?
Time's the critical thing, and this is the whole thing about the defib and what it's about and when you use it.
And what's...
Just to digress, I guess another famous incident was one of our colleagues, the Geelong doctor in Adelaide.
Yes.
He was resuscitated out on the ground by defib, so...
We've had Jeff on before, too. Yeah. It's a great
story. Why do you laugh
to...
when Jeff gets brought up? Oh, Jeff had a shocking time, and you laugh.
I'll tell you why I laugh.
Because he's an amazing character.
No, he's a great guy, but he told us, he told us that when he came to, the boys went in to visit him in hospital, and they all told him they'd done mouth-to-mouth on him. And they hadn't, the lion bugger.
The lion bugger. Funny. So what is a defibrillator? Can you explain that for us?
Yeah, defibrillator is people classically see this on TV programs, where the doctor picks up the paddles and rubs
them
together.
Why do they do that?
To spread the gel.
Oh, gel, of course,
So that's a defibrillator.
Yep.
And it delivers an electrical charge through the chest, from one paddle across the other, and an electrical stimulation jolts the heart back. Usually what's happening is the heart's just contracting at a million miles an hour.
Yep.
And it needs a little jolt to temporarily pause that and then resume a normal rhythm.
Normal programming.
Yeah.
So these, we don't get the paddles, you don't get the big gel paddles on these. So what are these machines?
These things are AEDs, automatic external defibrillators.
Yep.
As opposed to internal defibrillators. There's people running around the city with these things inside their body.
Yep.
So this machine is totally automatic. The way they work is you open the lid, they have paddles, little electrode paddles, usually in cellophane, in foil. You tear them open, you put them on the chest.
And the machine just talks to you.
And the machine starts talking to you. So the first thing it says is, call 000.
Right.
So it has sort of built-in action plan as well.
Yeah.
And then there's a great...
Which takes away the panic, I imagine.
Yeah, the doctors listening to this will remember this great book called The House of God, which we all read as interns, which says the first thing to do in a cardiac arrest is take your own pulse. So... calm down.
Yep.
And the machine starts talking to you. The most important thing is someone's got to be doing the CPR though. So someone
has compressions.
Someone has to be doing the compressions. Another person's got the machine, opening it, getting it ready, slapping the paddles on. And then you keep doing, and the machine will tell you, continue CPR.
Yep.
And then the machine will say to you, stop CPR, because then the machine needs a chance to read what's happening with the heart. And the machine will decide whether there's what we call a shockable rhythm, or there's no shockable rhythm, and it'll tell you to continue CPR. And the machine also tells you to stand clear, because you don't want to be touching the person.
Yeah.
And it literally talks you through the process.
And,
very handy.
And the good thing about it is, say the person's actually not having a cardiac arrest, which is what you're alluding to, so there's nothing wrong with the heart, it won't do anything then. So you can stick it on anybody.
Yeah, yeah.
So it will identify.
The machine will only
shock
if it reads a situation where a shock is necessary.
Gee, that's intelligent, isn't it? That's ridiculous when you think about it.
Well, yeah, computers. Amazing.
Yeah, but we're dealing with human bodies here. We're not dealing with computers. We're dealing with human bodies. Yeah.
It is amazing, and it's a fantastic thing that we now have that in our community. So they didn't have it, 10 years ago?
Oh, they were around, but they were very rare.
Rare, yeah.
And like anything, they were, they were probably $4,000 or $5,000.
You can get one out of a vending machine.
And now they're dropping price. And people probably seen them at airports, in major
stuck
public buildings, are up on the wall. In Monaco, where their first conference, what amazed me, and this probably reflects the demographic of the community, they're on street corners like fire hydrants.
Oh, they really?
Out in the street. They're not stolen. They're not tampered with. It's incredible.
There's never conferences in Deer Park, is there?
Yeah.
It's I'm struck by that every time my conferences.
It's a bit sort of
it's
like
Bermuda or it's Monaco or it's.
Well, Prince Albert's on the IOC commission, so.
Right, we've got to keep it convenient for him, I suppose.
Yeah.
They got a shocking life, these sports positions. My heart bleeds.
A lot in sunshine in Deer Park.
We're going to organise one for them.
Part of the election promise, wasn't there a commitment from the government to put these somewhere?
A thousand? It hasn't rolled out yet, so it's watch this space.
Well, Daniel Andrews was on this morning with the Morning Glory Boys. We need to get onto him about that.
Yeah. So I think the important thing is it won't be just a matter of, I'm assuming the government will have some criteria. It'll probably go to areas where the clubs are perhaps not as well resourced in terms of finances.
Yep.
I would say to people listening now along with clubs, it could be raised out of a sausage sizzle.
Yeah.
The cost of one of these machines. So I wouldn't be waiting. The important thing is it's not just the machine. People need to be aware of proper CPR, how to do it. There should be an action plan around this. So the good thing about this, it's a rare event.
Yeah.
Some people go through their whole lives not seeing one, but this population's growing, so just statistical chance you'll run across one of these things increases. So the action plan, who's going to call 000? Who's going to go to the gate and greet the ambulance? Who's going to show the ambulance where it is? Is the access for the ambulance clear, or does some guy park his car across it?
Mm.
Is people, what it's like in driveways to grounds? There's cars parked either side of the driveway, but can let a little car in, but an ambulance?
Yep.
Does someone then stand there and make sure no one fills the space, so when the person has to be driven out to the hospital, they're the things that have to be thought about.
Right.
So
that's a club level. That needs to be done at club level.
The action plan.
Yep.
Yeah, and all this stuff is on SMA's website, Sportsman Australia's website. So they've got all that information, all those bits and pieces, and you can go there and get it all. And the trouble is, if you're a big organisation, you've got this covered, but lots of us go to our local sporting clubs on the weekend and we don't have it.
Yeah, so, the AFL, SMA all encourage that there are qualified people rostered on for games, and that people do level one courses. They're about injury management, but I think there should be someone there who's done a CPR course.
Because we need to reiterate that point. The CPR is just as important.
Oh, it is the main thing.
The machine.
Yeah, as the machine, if not more important.
Yep.
Because it's the compressions that actually keeps the blood circulating and oxygen circulating to the brain and the heart.
Yep.
The machine is just there to try and shock the heart going. But sometimes it doesn't happen, and people still survive because you've kept them alive by the compressions, and the ambos can come along and start giving their drugs and whatever that might get the heart started.
That's what Dr. Chris Bradshaw said when he was in that incident we spoke of about before with Jeff over in Adelaide.
Yep.
That when they were doing the compressions, even though his heart wasn't contracting, he started to come around. But of course, he said as soon as they stopped, when the ambos got there, he just went back out again. So it works.
So the SMA's got all this information on the website, sma.org.
Yeah, so if you go to the SMA website and in the search box put Smart Play.
Yep.
Smart Play is a program that has fact sheets like, cycling sport, this, that. And you go to the emergency action plan. It's about number 34 on the website.
Yep.
And it lays out how to develop an action plan.
Well, that's pretty straightforward. Get onto the SMA website, sma.org.au, search for Smart Play. Get into RET 34, round about there, and you'll find out more about what you need to be doing to get this right.
Not just that, they've actually, scrolling through on the banner, they've got today's show for on SEN.
Have they?
On their website, you bet. So you can just go straight to there and you'll find out all this information.
All right, well, that's great news. David, really appreciate you coming in this afternoon and helping us out with that good stuff.
Yeah, important thing. Hope people now are a little bit more comfortable with the idea of it.
Yeah.
And are ready to go. And it might not happen for 5 years in your club. Practice it annually and you should be okay.
Hopefully never happens.
Hopefully never
happens. But we'd like you to be ready if, in fact, it does. Thank you very much, Dr. David Bolzanello, our resident sports physician here on Halftime Fit and Well. Cobes, nice work from you.
Thank you. And next week we're talking prostate cancer.
Oh, no. There are no videos being done next week.
Get your rubber gloves ready. I'm giving an example. You know how we did a video a couple of weeks
ago? Yes,
back?
There are no videos.
We're doing a video. We're doing demonstrate on you how we tell. Well, how we can do a self. No, we're not going to do
that. I'm not the age group. You're the age group. I'll hold the camera.
No. Don't think like that, Half.
I'll hold the camera.
Anyway, stay tuned.
That's a very nasty digit.